You are listening to Planet Waves FM from Chiron Matern and part of the Pacifica Radio Network. My name is Eric Francis Coppolino, and this segment of Planet Waves FM is the first in a planned new series of discussions about this thing called A Course in Miracles. Almost everyone who kind of is a participant in American society has heard the title of this thing at least once. There is not much known about what it actually is. I know very few people who have actually done the whole course. It is a course of study. So I don't really have that many people to talk about it with, but hey, at least I have you, and that's a great start. And the reason I'm thinking this is the perfect time to bring it up is because, well, there's two reasons. First of all, I am seeing a spiritual awakening happening among what I would call enlightened Christians, not the hellfire and brimstone world-ending Christians, but people who understand that that the spirit of love is what we mean when we say God, but also that there is a, let's say, a transcendent, all-connecting superintelligence that is helping guide us, and that's available. And of course, the first question there is, well, if there is, then why are things going so badly? And the answer to that is, who's asking for help? Who's listening? Who is following their inner instructions? And there, you know, therein lies the mystery. What the thing is, I can sum up very briefly, which is that it is a work said to be a channeled work, meaning that the difference essentially between a channeled work and a non-channeled ordinary piece of writing is that the in a channel work, the author is not planning what they're going to say. There's not an outline. There is a stream of consciousness, and from the author's standpoint, they're opening up to something other than what they think of as being their normal self. Now, this is not possible to, you know, verify. We have to accept the testimony of people who have this experience. And there are some who would say, no, this is not possible. It is a false distinction. Writing is writing. The you know, what people put on paper with a pencil from their mind is the same no matter what. And certainly anything can be written. But for the purpose of this discussion, I will propose that the material in A Course in Miracles came through a woman named Helen Schuckman. And it began doing so in 1965. I've done the chart for the first channeling of A Course in Miracles. I no longer have that chart, but it wouldn't be that difficult to reconstruct it. And she was the assistant to the department head of medical psychology at Columbia Presbyterian, which I guess at the time was called the Columbia University School of Physicians and Surgeons. So I believe that she and William Thetford, her boss, were PhD psychologists. I don't think that they were medical doctors. I think they were more in the psychology department. There's a book about the whole thing, which I have yet to read. I've read the short version of the book called Journey Without Distance. There's a longer version called Absence from Felicity. I haven't had the patience to go through that. So The Course in Miracles begins with, first of all, the writing of a woman who was, she considered herself an atheist, but she had had what she described as visionary dreams and transcendent experiences of various kinds. And one day heard a voice in her mind speaking to her, And this was at the time when, you know, especially if you were a psychologist at Columbia Presbyterian and you heard a voice in your mind and you said something like that, you might end up in a padded cell. She went to her friend and boss. Didn't really seem much like boss-employee relationship. They, you know, they seemed more to be equal colleagues, but he, I believe, was chairman and she was his assistant. And said, "What should I do?" And he said, "Well, why don't you write it down?" And so she wrote it down. And what came through was, famously, "This is A Course in Miracles. It's a required course. Only the time you take it is voluntary." Let me get the rest of that. Introduction to A Course in Miracles. Introduction to A Course in Miracles. Let's see if I can find this. Oh, hold on. I may have to crack a book open on the shelf, and I don't see one. Anyway, it basically says only the time you take it is voluntary. Free will doesn't mean you can do whatever you want. It means you can choose what you do at any given time. And then it ends with this mysterious thing that seems like a Zen cone, which is it says the course very simply can be summed up this way. Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing real exists. Therein lies the peace of God. This actually deserves to be read correctly in full. I've gone to the bookshelf in the spare bedroom and gotten my copy of what's called the second edition. This is the hardback edition without the numbers written between every sentence, which I suggest you get the oldest possible copy, because I find the numbers written between every sentence to be distracting and not necessary, because it's not the spirit of the course to be like cited line and verse. It's the vibe that counts. And here's the introduction. This is A Course in Miracles. It's a required course. Only the time you take it is voluntary. Free will does not mean you can establish the curriculum. It only means you can elect what you want to take at a given time. The course does not aim at teaching the meaning of love, for that is beyond what can be taught. It does aim, however, at removing the blocks to the awareness of love's presence, which is your natural inheritance. The opposite of love is fear, but what is all-encompassing can have no opposite. This course can therefore be summed up very simply in this way. Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God. Shanti. Shanti, Shanti. So, these words have reverberated in the minds of many people at that moment of embarking on this journey, and it is a journey. And no doubt, anyone who remembers them thinks, "Okay, I've got to work this out. Like, what is going on here? Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists." And so it is establishing a kind of a set of parameters for what is real and what is not real. And this is a crucial teaching in the course, is sorting out what is real from what is not real, so that you're working with what you know to be real. And like many have said before, only love is real, but it's very difficult for anyone invested in fear, to some extent, you know, all of us, right, at different times, you know, to stay on that loving vibration, and we require each other's assistance to do that. When this thing says it is A Course in Miracles, it actually means that. It is not miracle in any metaphorical sense. It is a miracle in the sense of the actual violation or transcendence, we might say, of the laws of space and time, such that impossible things can happen. And one of the things that the Corps says a number of times is that its purpose is to address the impossible situation, a situation where there's just no rational, logical, apparent, functional way out of the difficulty and the danger. And the more I look at the world right now, the more I think we are just in an impossible situation. The exactly wrong thing keeps happening every day, and a whole bunch of people think it's the exactly right thing and are making it very difficult to like have any discussion of like what the right thing is, because as part of the problem is the discussion's not allowed. And we could go on and on and on about how impossible this situation is, how completely insane it is. And that requires the intervention of something from another order of reality. And this is not praying for a miracle in the sense of a Hail Mary, oh my God, something's got to work, but rather this course is about a training program to help you get your mind oriented on a receptive state so that you are able to get the information that you need to take the action that you need, that you're able to tune into your guidance. Whatever else it may say it is, or people think it is, or whatever, the Course in Miracles is about one thing, which is about teaching you to listen to the voice of God within yourself. It calls it the Holy Spirit, which leads me to the first challenge, and I don't want to dwell on this too much, but I want to acknowledge that the whole thing is written in classically Christian language. God is referred to as a he. The Holy Spirit is referred to as a he. It's written in the first person by the voice of Jesus, channeled through Helen Schuckman. And this may be repelling. I mean, there's no doubt that it's repelling to many people who are, concerned about the patriarchy and all of this. And additionally, Christianity has an abysmal record for what it has done to people and done to women and done to societies and done to children and the infant graveyards of babies, infanticide victims from convents and on and on and on and on. So this is not about churchianity. It's not about the church. It's not about Christianity in any theological or denominational sense of the concept. My take, both being a student of literature and of this thing, and of diversity of spiritual paths, is the reason that it's written in the language that it's written in is to reach the people who will be reached by that language, meaning this is a kind of a, let's say, re-education for Christians in the actual meaning and purpose of the teachings of Jesus. Now, when we talk about Jesus in the Course, we're not talking about the kind of ahistorical Jesus. Did this guy Jesus of Nazareth live, and all that, and all those details? The voice of Jesus that I reckon is coming through is what I would call the cosmic Christ. The idea of the cosmic Christ is that that there needs to be some governing principle in the mind, or the mind descends into anarchy. And the governing principle could be any one of a number of things, ranging from the most positively hellacious to the most positively wonderful. There are people whose governing principle is just to be kind to everyone, and they spend their days writing thank you notes and doing polite things and helping people and giving their money to charity. And that's a governing principle. And that would be what I would consider something in the, you know, actual spirit of these teachings. And, you know, artists may have their art, and they have their governing principle, and that works for them to stay on the path that they need to stay on, to be the person that they need to be and they feel called to be. So a lot of things will work to provide a governing principle for the mind. The governing principle for the mind in this particular model of consciousness is the voice of the inner teacher. So the Bible and so forth calls this the Holy Spirit, and the Course in Miracles calls it the Holy Spirit. And when I was little, I must have been about seven, six. I was being sent to catechism school. I don't know what age you'd do. It was so young. I don't remember having a brother. It was just me and my mom talking, and I said, "What's the Holy Spirit?" And she said, "I don't know. Why don't you call up some priests and find out?" And they didn't know. But one said that it's tongues of flame, which is an image from the Bible. And the one or two, maybe three really relevant things that I would reluctantly call theology of Christianity is that the ultimate teaching of Jesus was that you can reach God from within your own mind. You can make contact. You don't need the Pope. You don't need, which didn't exist at the time. You don't need the Pharaoh. There were pharaohs. You don't need Pontius Pilate. You don't need authority. You have the direct connection. So before and after Jesus, the speaking from actual like red letter teachings that don't require the crucifixion or the resurrection or any of this, the before and after teaching is that the contact point of God is in all of us. This is not a new idea like new in the year 33. This is called Shekinah in other traditions. And, you know, it would perhaps make women and a couple of feminists feel better to know that Shekinah, the indwelling voice of God, is the feminine spirit of God. As opposed to the solar, it's more the lunar, the intuitive, the still small voice within, as the Course in Miracles calls it. And so whatever the words being tacked onto things are, this is, as far as I've studied this, and I've been through quite a bit of, you know, spiritual journeying, metaphysical training and study and therapy work and reading since I commenced this thing in March of 1986. Well, it's helpful. And yeah, this thing is a real thing, and it's a thing that's been this indwelling Shekinah, this indwelling voice of God within, is something that it appears repeatedly throughout the ages in various accounts and documents. But it gets colored by politics and incredulity, oh, whatever, you know, what, you know, anybody could have written that. I mean, you know what, it's just a book, like, who cares? However, Course in Miracles is not about the theory of things, though it presents theory. The point is not to master the theory. The point is to listen to yourself, which means to listen to the voice of Shekinah within you, and to learn to identify with that as your primary idea of who you are. So in this Course in Miracles model, there are two possible voices to tap into within yourself and two possible, let's say, sets of references to identify with. One of them is the ego. That's a word I do not use very much in my writing, but it's essential in understanding in explaining what the Course in Miracles is and how to use the training. So, it is pertaining to something very specific, and I would add it is not the ego of Freud, the healthy balanced sense of self, and all that. When the Course in Miracles references the ego, which it does throughout the whole thing, it is talking about a synthetic construct of what you are. It is further a construct that is based in fear and guilt. And fear and guilt being part of the same thing, but for purposes of discussion, are best left as individuated concepts. But the ego is made of these things. It is a complete construct of a self that is based on anxiety and terror and disturbance and thoughts of revenge and all of these things that are so common to the human experience, as well as the constant disturbances and disruptions that we go through the day, experiencing, and this sense of futility. All of this pretty much comes down to guilt and fear. And all the beliefs that arise, if you could imagine an entire personality construct made of guilt and fear. And this is not to say, you feel guilty, you are fearful, but everyone experiences guilt and fear. And it is not always obvious that this is a version of oneself. This is a whole self concept. It's not just like a facet of the self or a temporary state of being for this self. It is the whole concept of the self, and that whole concept furthermore lends itself to a very strange form of identification with the body, which is going to require some new unpacking now that I understand what's being done to the world is disembodiment. And on the list of issues that I would have to say require careful analysis for me to be intellectually honest with you about them. One of them is the body, the role of the body as described by the Course, and disembodiment as a problem that we're facing now. Because one of the things that the Course gets into is the over-identification with the body and the body's personality, the ego, as a source of strength. So we'll get to that when the subject is, when there's like a topic that is suitable to use as an example to assess. I'm not a purist of A Course in Miracles. In other words, I don't like say this is what the book says, therefore this is what you do. I'm not taking a fundamentalist or orthodox position. Obviously, that is not me, but rather I am attempting to be pragmatic and to be in line with the basic spirit and teachings of this work, without like shutting down, without shutting anyone or anything down. And there are caveats that I have, cautions that I have about this, because I think that it's, first of all, it's worth being mindful of any philosophy and what it's really saying. The thing is, to really do this, you have to temporarily suspend disbelief enough to actually grasp the idea that's being expressed. And so the other voice, the ego's voice, is going to keep challenging and challenging and saying, no, that's impossible, that's not true, that's not real, that's not that, the world is a terrible place, and so forth and so forth. And so I'm aware of that. And then I do think that, people have questions and I have questions, and it's fair to ask them and to ask for an answer. And this is one of the primary techniques of the Course in Miracles, is to ask for help. If you have a question, ask the question to your inner voice. Ask the question to your inner guide, your inner teacher, to Shekinah, the flame burning within you, and then listen carefully for the answer. And there's a lot of the exercises in this course that are almost all of them really are aimed at doing that. One of my approaches as a teacher and as someone who's called upon to be a spiritual guide to people is, first of all, I think that, at least as far as I'm concerned, having a conscious course of understanding sexuality, one's own sexuality, is an essential companion to doing this work. The course does not address physical reality, and it somewhat distinctly omits references to sexuality. And that has always struck me as being noteworthy, being worthy of note. And what I learned in investigating the origins of the course and also in reading the first number of pages of what's called the unrevised manuscript, the UR manuscript, because the project went through several revisions. It was channeled in shorthand by a stenographer, Helen. It was then typed up into a manuscript. It was then edited into the Hugh Lynn Casey version of the manuscript. Then it received a final edit in what became called the second edition. That's the one that we read, the second edition. In the UR manuscript, you see a lot of references to the conflict within William Thetford, Helen's assistant in the channeling, because he was gay and he was in the leadership of a large, powerful department in a large, powerful organization and was in profound conflict about being gay. And so you can see in the unrevised manuscript, which is just basically a transcription of the shorthand, something like 70 Greg notebooks were the total, you know, the result of that's a lot of channeling. It's about 1,000 pages when printed, but shorthand is short. And by the way, Thetford's role was to type what Helen came in with in the morning. They'd meet in the morning before work in the office, pull all the shades down. It was very clandestine. And for 7 years, they and this is a time when the world was a lot more stable now. Nobody would have the same assistant for 7 years now, or it would be unlikely. But in that time, the world, especially the corporate structured world, was a more stable place. And they would meet at work and pull the shades. And Helen would read what she had channeled the day before or the night before, and then Bill would type it up. And in there, you will see at the beginning a number of references to the challenges of Bill's sexual orientation. Now, among those involved in psychology, there is often an avoidance of the thing that one would think would be one of the most important things, which is the engagement of questions of sexuality. And because I am equal parts tantric teacher and student and tantric and Course in Miracles student and teacher, I can say to you, okay, this is safe to proceed if you are an honest student of sexuality and your sexuality, because the questions are either left unanswered in the Course in Miracles, or the thing that kind of wipes the slate clean is that there is no guilt, there is no sin, forget it. And so the Course would say, well, you can find the references, it's a special topic, it doesn't matter. The specialness of sexuality does not matter. What matters is, listen carefully, there is no sin, there is no guilt in reality. Therefore, do what you want. And it is worth mentioning that the Course in Miracles is, I would estimate about a third of it is about the nature of relationships. and the nature of what is called the special relationship, which is the type of relationship that we all tend to have. And there, in those relationships, there's a special love relationship and the special hate relationship, both of which are illusions. And there is the holy relationship, where people are consciously aware of their role in service and the importance of their collaboration to help bring in the corrections to all of this insanity that we are experiencing. And that, I am certain, is the reason. I know from my guidance, which I am being guided to do this. I am not just simply electing to do it. It is like every day I wake up and the voice says, okay, let's go. Not too many people teaching this stuff. Is anybody teaching this stuff? Well, you've been studying it for 35 years. Let's go. You got a program. Let's go. Okay. So in some ways, the question of sexuality is addressed by the discussion of the special relationship, and there is no sin, there is no guilt, forget it, it's ridiculous. That still leaves a lot of questions unanswered, and I personally maybe believe is the wrong word, but understand that questions of sexuality are very important questions, and that in physical form, to have one's spiritual path integrated with one's sexuality is essential to that spiritual path not, A, being productive, and B, not being a source of conflict, because so many spiritual teachings are blatantly, baldly anti-sex. That's the whole problem. It is the root of all evil, and so forth. And renunciation is the only way to solve the problem. I have never known that to be true. In other words, through my personal practice and witness of others. In fact, you don't have to go far to see that the attempt at sexual renunciation and pretending that it doesn't matter, you're not interested, and that you're going to have your relationship to God and only God and all that is a source of tremendous inner conflict for people by leaving these fundamental questions unanswered, but also not taking the opportunity that engaging sexuality in a fully conscious way as an integrated part of one's spiritual path offers. That's the tantric path. That's the existential study of existence that is the tantric path, right? Tantra is not about sex. Sex is the metaphor. Sex is ever present in Tantra. Sexual feelings are ever present, but it's not about sex. That's the metaphor. That's the calling of life. That's the vital force. And it is largely due to the pervasive belief in sin and fear of sexual feelings and fear of women and the fear of reprisal and the fear of jealousy and all of these dark feelings that lead people to say, no, we're going to skip this whole subject. It's just not worth doing. And then that tends to manifest those very subjects in shadow form, i.e. child sex abuse going on in the church. All these pure, holy, renunciate priests are busy fucking the pure, holy, renunciate nuns, and then they're killing babies and throwing them in mass graves, and there are millions of these. This has got 2,000 years to go on. So I consider it a special danger to not embrace sexuality because it is necessary. Now, we will see. I'm embarking on a new journey here with this, and I will report to you my discoveries and my findings. My intended title for this new series is called The Branching of the Road, which is one of the chapters in the text of A Course in Miracles. The Course in Miracles is in three sections. The text, which is volume one, and the original of that is, it's a nice hefty book, It's about 620 pages. And then there's a the workbook, which is 365 lessons, one lesson a day for 1 year. The suggestion of pausing to possibly, if you need to, pausing to repeat a lesson, but taking them in order, this is pretty important. There's a logic to it in a conscious training program to it. And it's, you may think, oh, this is like brainwashing, but you're really being taught how to meditate is what it comes down to. You're being taught how to ask for help when you need it and listen. And you're being taught to question your fear and question your guilt. And that takes training. So it's less about brainwashing and more about just training some basic discipline of learning how to tune into your inner voice and your inner teacher. And being open to listen. At one point, the Course says that the Holy Spirit's voice is as loud as your willingness to listen. So it's all about you and about the choices that you make. The third book is the Teacher's Manual. And my intent is to stick with the Teacher's Manual as much as possible. It's only about 70 pages, and we have acquired a stack of them, and it's available online, and I've got the stack of them for people who donate to the program, but of course I wouldn't deny anyone who didn't or couldn't, and there's lots of ways to get it, though I, again, do suggest doing a used book search and getting the oldest possible copy that you can, like something printed in the 80s or 90s. I don't know when they did this retypesetting. I think Random House or somebody picked it up. It was self-published for many years by the Foundation for Inner Peace. $20, mail check to Tiburon, California, and you get your books back in a couple of days. And now it's gone into major publishing. I believe the copyright has been lifted, so anybody can publish it. So there's numerous versions. But I'm favorable to the old ones because it's closer to the original, and those numbers aren't there. Like every paragraph and sentence, and like, ooh, according to page 41, section 5, line, verse, that's just not the spirit of the Course in Miracles. My proposed title is the Branching of the Road, and it is one of my favorite chapters in the text. I'll just read you a little bit of it, and then I'm going to read you a little bit of the Teacher's Manual. So chapter 22, section 4, that's in the original. When you come to the place where the branch in the road is quite apparent, you cannot go ahead. You must go one way or the other. For now, if you go straight ahead, the way you went before you reach the branch, you will go nowhere. The whole purpose of coming this far was to decide which branch you will take now. The way you came no longer matters. It can no longer serve. No one who reaches this far can make the wrong decision, though he can delay. There is no part of the journey that seems more hopeless and futile than standing where the road branches and not deciding which way to go. It is but the first few steps along the right way that seem hard, for you have chosen, though you may still think you can go back and make the other choice. This is not so. A choice made with the power of heaven to uphold it cannot be undone. Your way is decided. There is nothing you will not be told if you acknowledge this. This is on page 444 of the original. The Teacher's Manual basically begins with the idea that appears consistently in the Course, that the role of teaching and learning is actually reversed in the thinking of the world. The reversal is characteristic. It seems as if the teacher and the learner are separated, the teacher giving something to the learner rather than to himself. Further, the act of teaching is regarded as a special activity in which one engages only a relatively small portion of the time. The Course, on the other hand, emphasizes that to teach is to learn, so that the teacher and the learner are the same. It also emphasizes that teaching is a constant process. It goes on every moment of the day and continues into sleeping thoughts as well. to teach is to demonstrate. There are only two thought systems, and you demonstrate you believe one or the other is true all the time. From your demonstration, others learn, and so do you. The question is not whether you will teach, for in that there is no choice. The purpose of the course might be said to provide you with the means of choosing what you want to teach on the basis of what you want to learn. You cannot give to someone else, but only to yourself. And this you learn through teaching. Teaching is but a call to witness to attest what you believe. It is a method of conversion. This is not done by words alone. Any situation must be to you a chance to teach others what you are and what they are to you. No more than that, but also never less. The curriculum you set up is therefore determined exclusively by what you think you are and what you believe the relationship of others is to you. In the formal teaching situation, these questions may be totally unrelated to what you think you're teaching. Yet it's impossible not to use the content of any situation. Yet it is impossible not to use the content of any situation on behalf of what you really teach and therefore really learn. To this, the verbal content of your teaching is quite irrelevant. It may coincide, it may not. It is the teaching underlying what you say that teaches you. Teaching but references what you believe about yourself. Its fundamental purpose is to diminish self-doubt. That does not mean the self you're trying to protect is real, but it does mean that the self you think is real is what you teach. This is inevitable. There's no escape from it. How could there be otherwise? Everyone who follows the world's curriculum, and everyone here does follow it until he changes his mind, teaches solely to convince himself that he is what he is not. Herein is the purpose of the world. What then would its curriculum be? Into this hopeless and closed learning situation, which teaches nothing but despair and death, God sends his teachers. And they teach his lessons of joy and hope. And as they teach his lessons of joy and hope, their learning finally becomes complete. Except for God's teachers, there would be little hope of salvation, for the world of sin would seem forever real. The self-deceiving must deceive, for they teach through deception. And what else is hell? This is a manual for teachers of God. They are not perfect, or they would not be here. Yet it is their mission to become perfect here, and so they teach perfection over and over in many, many ways until they have learned it. And then they are seen no more, and their thoughts remain a source of strength and truth forever. Who are they? How are they chosen? What do they do? How can they work out their own salvation and the salvation of the world? This manual attempts to answer these questions. That's my introduction to The Branching of the Road, a new series of Course in Miracles presentations, programs. There's an original. I'll try to find it and link it from the bottom of this. This is on its own program, and also part of the 1029 Course in Miracles. Planet Waves FM. All right. Enough of today for today. Enough of this program for this week. Thank you all for your love and your support and doing what you can to keep the lights on here and the bits and bytes moving in your direction. And thank you for inviting me into your mind or into your home or your car or all of the above. And the good Lord willing, I'll be back with you in another week. Thank you for listening, and bye for now.
The Chicos, the Brizzles, the wide Rio Grande. One more river to cross. The road running wild through the cottonwood stand. One more river to cross. I tried to be good for most of my life. Never done wrong when I knew what was right. So when I cross over, my heart will be light. One more river to cross. I was 12 when I first crossed the Cumberland Gap. One more river to cross. And except for in memory, I never looked back. One more river to cross. The snake in the sand, the priest, the pirate, the Lolo, the Bravo, San Bernadette. I'm tired, but I still got one left in me yet. One more river to cross. He's carrying me. One more river to cross. And when I cross over, he'll go running free. One more river to cross. And out where the paints and the pedals run wild, through endless green valleys, till one day finds a river and crossing it back to my side. One more river to cross. A river and crossing it back to my side. One more river to cross.